pierce skin, flesh, scrape against bone, and impale itself into the earth below. Invincible arched once, then shuddered, and lay still. Joram and Jerem found him there some time later, after the snow had tapered off, curled up tightly against the cooling corpse of a once glorious animal brimming with life and energy. As the elder man bent to pick him up, Arthas cried out with pain. "Sorry, lad," Joram said, his voice almost unbearably kind, "for hurting you, and for the accident." "Yes," Arthas said weakly. "The accident. He lost his footing."
"And no wonder in this weather. That storm came on quickly. You're lucky you're alive. Come on, we'll get you inside and send someone to the palace."
As he shifted in the farmer's strong grip, Arthur said, "Miriam, here? So I can come visit?" Balnir exchanged glances with his son, then nodded.
"Aye, of course. He was a noble steed."
Arthas craned his neck to look at the body of the horse he had named Invincible. He would let them all think it was an accident, because he could not bear to tell anyone what he had done. And he made a vow, then and there, that if anyone else ever needed protection, that if sacrifices had to be made for the welfare of others, he would do it. "Whatever it takes," he thought. Chapter 5. Summer was in full blaze, and the merciless sun beat down on His Royal Highness Prince Arthas Menethil as he rode through the streets of Stormwind. He was in a foul mood, despite the fact that this was a day that he was supposed to have been looking forward to all his life. The sun glinted off the full plate armor he wore, and Arthas thought he'd bake to death before he reached the cathedral. Sitting atop his new charger only served to remind him that the horse, while powerful, well-trained, and well-bred, was not invincible, gone for only a few months and bitterly missed. And he found that his mind had suddenly gone blank regarding what he was supposed to do once the ceremony began. Beside him rode his father, who seemed completely unaware of his son's irritation.
"This has been a day long in coming, my son," Terranus said, turning to smile at Arthas.
Despite the heat and the weight of the helm he wore, Arthas was glad of it. It concealed his face, and he wasn't sure he could fake a convincing smile right now.
"Indeed it has, father," he replied, keeping his voice calm.
It was one of the biggest celebrations Stormwind had ever seen. In addition to Terranus, many other kings, nobility, and famous personages were in attendance, riding like a parade through the city's white cobbled streets to the massive Cathedral of Light, damaged during the First War, but now restored and even more glorious than before. Arthas's boyhood friend Varian, King of Stormwind, was now married and a new father. He had opened the palace to all the visiting royalty and their retinues. Sitting with Varian last night, drinking mead and talking, had been the highlight of the trip for Arthas so far. The hurting, traumatized youth of a decade ago had grown into a confident, handsome, centered king. Somewhere along about early morning, after midnight and before dawn, they had gone to the armory, fetched wooden training swords, and gone at each other for a long time, laughing and recounting memories, their prowess only a little the worse for the alcohol they'd consumed. Varian, trained since early childhood, had always been good, and now he was better. But so was Arthas, and he gave as good as he got. But now it was all formality, incredibly hot armor, and a nagging sense that he didn't deserve the honor that was about to be bestowed upon him. In a rare moment, Arthas had spoken of his feelings to Uther, the intimidating paladin who, since Arthas was old enough to remember, had been the very image of rock-solid steadfastness to the light, had startled the prince with his reply.
"Lad, no one feels ready. No one feels he deserves it. And you know why? Because no one does. It's grace, pure and simple. We are inherently unworthy, simply because we're human, and all human beings, I and elves and dwarves and all the other races, are flawed. But the light loves us anyway. It loves us for what we sometimes can rise to in rare moments. It loves us for what we can do to help others. And it loves us because we can help it share its message by striving daily to be worthy, even though we understand that we can't ever truly become so."
He'd clapped a hand on Arthas's shoulder, giving him a rare, simple smile.
"So stand there today, as I did, feeling that you can't possibly deserve it or ever be worthy, and know that you're in the same place every single paladin has ever stood."
It comforted Arthas a little.
He squared his shoulders, tilted the visor back, and smiled and waved to the crowd that was cheering so happily on this hot summer day.
Rose petals were showered upon him, and from somewhere trumpets blared. They had reached the cathedral. Arthas dismounted, and a groom led away his charger. Another servant stepped up to take the helm he tugged off. His blonde hair was damp with sweat, and he quickly ran a gauntleted hand over it. Arthas had never been to Stormwind before, and he was impressed by the combination of serenity and power the cathedral radiated. Slowly, he moved up the carpeted, carved stairs, grateful for the sudden coolness of the building's stone interior. The fragrance of the incense was calming and familiar. It was the same as that which his family burned in their small chapel. There was no giddy throng here now, just silent, respectful rows of prominent personages and clergy. Arthas recognized several faces: Gen Greymane, Thoris Trollbane, Admiral Dalen Proudmore. Arthas blinked, then his lips curved into a smile.
Jaina. She had certainly grown up in the years since he had last seen her. Not quite a drop-dead beauty, but pretty. The liveliness and intelligence he'd responded to as a boy still radiating from her like a beacon. She caught Arthas's look and smiled a little in return, inclining her head in respect.
Arthas returned his attention to the altar he approached, but felt a little bit of the trepidation leave his heart. He hoped there would be a chance for him to talk to her after all the formalities were taken care of. Archbishop Alonsus Fowl awaited him at the altar. The archbishop reminded Arthas more of Great Father Winter than of any of the rulers he had hitherto met. Short and stout, with a long, flowing, snow-white beard and bright eyes, even in the midst of solemn ceremony, Fowl radiated warmth and kindliness. Fowl waited until Arthas approached him and knelt before him respectfully, before opening a large book and speaking.
"In the light, we gather to empower our brother. In its grace, he will be made anew. In its power, he shall educate the masses. In its strength, he shall combat the shadow. And in its wisdom, he shall lead his brethren to the eternal rewards of paradise."
On his left, several men, and a few women, Arthas noticed, dressed in flowing white robes, stood still and poised. Some held censers, which swayed almost hypnotically. Others bore large candles. One carried an embroidered blue stole. Arthas had been introduced to many of them earlier, but found that their names had gone right out of his head. That was unusual for him. He was genuinely interested in those who worked for him and served under him, and made an effort to get to know all their names. Archbishop Fowl asked the clerics to bestow their blessings upon Arthas. They did, the one who bore the blue stole coming forward, to drape it about the prince's neck and anointing his brow with holy oil. "By the grace of the light, may your brethren be healed," the cleric said. Foul turned to the men on Arthas's right.
"Knights of the Silver Hand, if you deem this man worthy, place your blessings upon him."
In contrast to the first group, these men, standing at attention in heavy, gleaming plate armor, were all known to Arthas. They were the original paladins of the Silver Hand, and it was the first time they had assembled since their induction many years past. Uther, of course. Tyrion Fordring, aging but still powerful and graceful, now governor of Hearthglen. The 6.5-foot Sadon Dathrahan, and the pious, bushy-bearded Gavinrad. One was missing from their number, Tyrallion, right hand to Anduin Lothar in the Second War, who was lost with the company that had ventured through the dark portal when Arthas was 12. Gavinrad stepped forth, holding an enormous, heavy-looking hammer, its silver head etched with runes, and its sturdy haft wrapped in blue leather. He placed the hammer in front of Arthas, then stepped back to stand with his brethren. It was Uther the Lightbringer himself, Arthas's mentor in the Order, who next came forward. In his hands, he carried a pair of ceremonial shoulder plates. Uther was the most controlled man Arthas had ever known, and yet his eyes were bright with unshed tears as he placed the armor on Arthas's broad shoulders. He spoke in a voice that was both powerful and trembling with emotion.
"By the strength of the light, may your enemies be undone."
His hand lingered a moment on Arthas's shoulder, then he too retreated. Archbishop Fowl smiled at the prince kindly. Arthas met the gaze evenly, no longer worried. He remembered everything now.
"Arise and be recognized," Fowl bade him.
Arthas did so.
"Do you, Arthas Menethil, vow to uphold the honor and codes of the Order of the Silver Hand?"
Arthas blinked, momentarily surprised at the lack of his title. "Of course," he reasoned, "I'm being inducted as a man, not a prince."
"I do." "Do you vow to walk in the grace of the light and spread its wisdom to your fellow man?"
"I do."
"Do you vow to vanquish evil wherever it be found, and protect the innocent with your very life?"
By my blood and honor, I do."
That was close. He'd almost messed up. Fowl gave him a quick wink of reassurance, then turned to address both the clerics and the paladins.
"Brothers and sisters, you who have gathered here to bear witness, raise your hands and let the light illuminate this man."
The clerics and paladins all lifted right hands, which were now suffused by a soft, golden glow. They pointed at Arthas, directing the radiance toward him. Arthas's eyes were wide with wonder, and he waited for the glorious glow to envelop him. Nothing happened. The moment stretched on. Sweat broke out on Arthas's brow. What was going wrong? Why wasn't the light wrapping itself around him in blessing and benediction? And then the sunlight streaming in through windows in the ceiling slowly began to move toward the prince, standing alone in shining armor, and Arthas exhaled in relief. This had to be what Uther had spoken of. The feeling of unworthiness that Uther assured him all paladins felt simply seemed to drag out the moment. The words Uther had spoken came back to him.
"No one feels he deserves it. It's grace, pure and simple. But the light loves us anyway."
Now it shone down on him, in him, through him, and he was forced to shut his eyes against the almost blinding radiance. It warmed at first, then seared, and he winced slightly. He felt scoured, emptied, scrubbed clean, then filled again, and he felt the light swell inside him and then fade away to a tolerable level. He blinked and reached for the hammer, the symbol of the order. As his hand closed about the haft, he looked up at Archbishop Fowl, whose benign smile widened.
"Arise, Arthas Menethil, paladin defender of Lordaeron. Welcome to the Order of the Silver Hand."
Arthas couldn't help it. He grinned as he grasped the enormous hammer, so large that for a brief moment he thought he wouldn't be able to lift it, and swung it upward with a whoop. The light, he realized, made the hammer seem to weigh less in his hands. At his exultant cry, the cathedral suddenly began to ring with the sound of answering cheers and applause. Arthas found himself roughly embraced by his new brothers and sisters, and then all remnants of formality were torn away as his father, Varian, and others crowded the altar area. Much laughter was had as Varian tried to clap him on the shoulder, only to have his hand sting when he struck the hard metal of the shoulder plates. And then, somehow, Arthas was turned around and stared into the blue-eyed, smiling face of Lady Jaina Proudmoore. They were mere inches apart, jostled and pressed together by the throng that had somehow sprung up around the newest member of the Order of the Silver Hand, and Arthas wasn't about to let the unique opportunity slip away. Almost at once, his left arm slipped around her trim waist, and he pulled her to him. She looked startled, but not displeased, as he hugged her. She returned the hug, laughing against his chest for a moment, then pulling back, still smiling. For a moment, the happy sounds of a celebrating crowd on a hot summer afternoon went away, and all Arthas could see was this suntanned, smiling girl. Could he kiss her? Should he kiss her? He certainly wanted to. But even as he debated, she disentangled herself and stepped back. And her fair-haired, girlish form was replaced by another fair-haired, girlish form. Kalia laughed and hugged her brother tightly.
"We're all so proud of you, Arthas," she exclaimed.
He grinned and returned the embrace, happy to hear his sister's approval, sorry that he'd not gone ahead and kissed the Admiral's daughter.
"You will make a wonderful paladin, I'm sure of it."
"Well done, my son," Taranis said. "I am a proud father today."
Arthas's eyes narrowed. Today? What was meant by that? Was his father not proud of him on other days? He was suddenly angry and not certain why or with whom. The light, the laying its approval, Jaina backing away from him right at the moment when he could have kissed her, Taranis and his comment. He forced a smile and began to shoulder his way through the crowd. He'd had enough of this press of people, few of whom really knew him, none of whom understood. Arthas was 19. At the same age, Varian had been king for a full year. He was of an age to do whatever he wanted to, and now had the blessing of the Silver Hand to guide him. He didn't want to simply linger at the palace of Lordaeron, or do boring state visits. He wanted to do something fun. Something that his power, his position, his abilities would earn him. And he knew exactly what he wanted that something to be. Part 2. The Bright Lady. Interlude. It was exactly the sort of day Jaina Proudmoore didn't like. Sullen, stormy, and bitterly cold. While the ocean breezes always made Theramore feel cool, even in the hot summer months, the chill of the wind and rain that now pummeled the city cut to the bone. The ocean churned unhappily, the sky above it gray and menacing. It showed no signs of letting up. Outside, training fields turned to mud, travelers sought the shelter of the inn, and Dr. Van Housen would need to watch the injured in his care for signs of illness brought on by the sudden cold and wetness. Janus' guards stood in the downpour without complaint. No doubt, they were miserable. Jaina ordered one of her attendants to take the pot of tea she had just brewed for her and her chancellor, down to the stalwart guards enduring their duty. She could wait for a second pot to be ready. Thunder rumbled, and there was a flash of lightning. Jaina, snug in her tower surrounded by the books and papers she so loved, shivered and drew her cloak about her more closely, then turned to one who was doubtless even more uncomfortable than she. Magna Aegwin, former guardian of Tirisfal, mother to the great Magus Medivh, once the most powerful woman in the world, sat in a chair drawn close to the fire, sipping a cup of tea. Her gnarled hands closed about the cup, seeking its warmth. Her long hair, white as freshly fallen snow, was loose about her shoulders. She looked up as Jaina approached and sat in the chair across from her. Her green eyes, a deep, knowing emerald, missed nothing.
"You're thinking about him,"
Jaina scowled and looked into the fire, trying to distract herself with the dancing flames. "I didn't know being a guardian meant you could read minds."
"Minds? Pff. It's your face and bearing I can read like a primer, child. That furrow in your brow crinkles just so when it's he who occupies your mind. Besides, you always get in this mood when the weather turns."
Jaina shivered. "Am I truly so easy to read?" Aegwin's sharp features softened, and she patted Jaina's hand.
"Well, I've got 1,000 years of observation under my belt. I'm a bit better at reading people than most."
Jaina sighed. "It's true. When the weather is cold, I do think of him. About what happened. About whether I could have done anything." Aegwin sighed. 1,000 years, and I don't think I've ever really been in love. Too much else to worry about. But if it's any consolation to you..."
"He's been on my mind, too."
Jaina blinked, surprised and unsettled by the comment.
"You've been thinking about Arthas?"
The former guardian regarded her keenly.
"The Lich King. He's not Arthas. Not anymore."
"I don't need to be reminded of that," Jaina said, a touch too sharply.
"Why do you... Can't you feel it?"
Slowly, Jaina nodded. She had tried to chalk it up to the weather and the tensions that always ran high when it was so damp and unpleasant. But Aegwin was suggesting that there was more to it than that, and Jaina Proudmoore, 30 years of age, ruler of Theramore Isle, knew the old woman was right. Old woman. A smile flickered on her lips as she thought about the words. She herself was well past her own youth, a youth in which Arthas Menethil had played so significant a role.
"Tell me of him," Aegwin said, sitting back in her chair.
At that moment, one of the servants came in with a fresh pot of tea and cookies hot from the oven. Jaina accepted a cup gratefully.
"I've told you all I know."
"No," Aegwin retorted. "You told me the facts of what happened. I want you to tell me about him. Arthas Menethil. Because whatever's going on right now up in Northrend, and yes, I think something is going on, it's about Arthas, not the Lich King. Not yet, at any rate. Besides,"
and the old woman grinned, the wrinkles that lined her face overshadowed by the impish, girlish glint in her emerald eyes,
"it's a cold and rainy day, and that's exactly the sort of day stories were made for."
Chapter 6. Jaina Proudmoore hummed a little as she strode through the gardens of Dalaran. She'd been here for 8 years now, and the city never lost its sense of wonder. Everything here emanated magic, and to her, it was almost like a scent, a fragrance of everything in bloom, and she inhaled it with a smile. Of course, some of that fragrance was that of actual flowers in bloom. The gardens of this place were as saturated with magic as everything else. She had never seen healthier, more colorful flowers, or eaten more delicious fruits and vegetables than here. And the knowledge. Jaina felt she had learned more in the last 8 years than in her entire life, and most of that in the last 2, since Archmage Antonidas had formally taken her as his apprentice. Few things contented her more than sitting curled up in the sun with a cold glass of sweet nectar and a pile of books. Of course, some of the rarer parchments needed to be protected from sunlight and spilled nectar, so the next best thing was sitting inside one of the many rooms, wearing gloves so her hands would not damage the fragile paper, carefully perusing something that was older almost than she could comprehend. But for now, she just wanted to wander in the gardens, feeling the living earth beneath her feet, smelling the incredible scents, and, when hunger gnawed at her stomach, reaching up and plucking a ripe golden bark apple warm from the sunlight and crunching it happily. "In Quel'Thalas," came a smooth, cultured voice, "there are trees that tower over these in a glory of white bark and golden leaves that all but sing in the evening breezes. I think you would enjoy seeing them someday." Jaina turned to offer Prince Kael'thas Sunstrider, son to Anastarion, king of the Quel'Dorei elves, a smile and a deep curtsy. "Your Highness," she said, "I wasn't aware you'd returned. A pleasure." "And yes, I'm certain I would." Jaina was the daughter, if not of royalty, of nobility and of a ruler. Her father, Admiral Daelin Proudmoore, ruled the city-state of Kol Tiras, and Jaina had grown up accustomed to interaction with nobility. And yet, Prince Kael'thas unnerved her. She wasn't quite sure what it was. He was handsome, certainly, with that grace and beauty that all elves possessed. Tall, with hair like spun gold that fell halfway down his back, he always looked to her like a figure out of legend, rather than a real, living person. Even though he was currently clad in the simpler violet and gold robes of a mage of Dalaran, and not the lavish robes he would wear to official occasions, he never seemed to lose his stiffness. Perhaps that was it. There was a sort of antiquated formality about him. Two, he was much older than she, though he looked about her age. He was sharply intelligent and an extremely talented and powerful mage, and some of the students whispered that he was one of the 6, the secret membership of the highest-ranking magi of Dalaran. So she supposed she wasn't that much of a country bumpkin to find him intimidating. He reached up and took an apple himself, biting into it. "There is a certain heartiness about food native to human lands that I have come to appreciate." He smiled conspiratorially. "Sometimes elven food, while certainly delicious and attractively presented, leaves one still hungry for something more substantial." Jaina smiled. Prince Kael'thas always tried so hard to put her at ease. She only wished it worked better. "Few things are nicer than an apple and a slice of Dalaran sharp," she agreed. The silence stretched between them, awkward despite the casualness of the setting and the warmth of the sun. "So, you are back for a while?" "Yes, my business in Silvermoon has concluded for the time being, so I should not need to depart again any time soon." He looked at her as he took another bite of the apple, his handsome features schooled to be impassive. Still, Jaina knew he was waiting for her reaction. "We are all pleased at your return, Your Highness." He wagged a finger at her. "Ah, I have told you. I would prefer it if you would simply call me Kael." "I'm sorry, Kael." He looked at her, and a hint of sorrow passed over his perfect features, gone so quickly that Jaina wondered if she had imagined it. "How do your studies progress?"
Very well, she said, warming to the conversation now that it was back on scholastic ground. Watch. She pointed to a squirrel, perched in a high branch, nibbling on an apple, and murmured a spell. At once, it transformed into a sheep, a look of comical surprise on its face, as the branch broke beneath its weight and it started to fall. Immediately, Jaina extended a hand, and the squirrel sheep halted in midair. Gently, she lowered it unharmed to the ground. It bleated at her, twitching its ears, and after a moment again resumed the shape of a very confused-looking squirrel. It sat on its haunches, chattered at her angrily, then, with a flick of its fluffy tail, leaped up into the tree again.
Kaelfas chuckled.
Well done. No more setting books on fire, I hope.
Jaina turned scarlet, remembering the incident. When she'd first arrived, her talent with fire had needed some desperate honing. She'd accidentally incinerated a tome while working with Kaelfas, one he'd actually been holding at the time. He'd responded by insisting that for the next few months, she would need to practice all fire spells in the vicinity of the pools that encircled the prison area.
No, that hasn't happened for a while.
I'm pleased to hear it. Jaina. He stepped forward, tossing away the half-eaten apple, smiling gently.
I wasn't making idle conversation when I invited you to come to Quel'Thalas. Dalaran is a marvelous city, and some of the finest magi in Azeroth live here. I know you're learning much, but I think you would enjoy visiting an entire land where magic is so much a part of the culture. Not just a part of the city, or confined to a handful of elite, educated magi. Magic is the birthright of every citizen. We are all embraced by the Sunwell. Surely you must have some curiosity about it yourself.
She smiled at him.
I do indeed, and I would love to go there someday. But I think, for the moment, my studies can be best advanced here.
Her smile stretched into a grin.
Where people know what to do when I light books on fire.
He chuckled at that, but his sigh was sad.
Perhaps you are right. And now, if you will excuse me.
He gave her a wry grin. Archmage Antonidas demands a recounting of my time in Silvermoon. Nonetheless, this prince and mage looks deeply forward to more demonstrations of how your training has advanced, and more time spent with you.
Kaelfas placed a hand to his heart and bowed.
Not knowing how to respond, Jaina settled for a curtsy, then watched him go, striding through the gardens like the sun, head high, every inch of him exuding confidence and coiled grace. Even the dirt seemed unwilling to cling to his boots and robe hem. Jaina crunched a final bite of the apple, then she too tossed it away. The squirrel she'd polymorphed earlier scurried headfirst down the trunk to claim a prize more reachable than the apple that still hung on the tree. A pair of hands abruptly covered her eyes. She started, but only in mild surprise. No one who posed a threat would be able to breach the powerful wards erected about the magical city.
Guess who? A male voice whispered, but still holding tones of mirth.
Jaina, her eyes covered, considered, fighting back a smile.
Your hands are calloused, so you're not a wizard, she said. You smell like horses and leather.
Her own small hands brushed feather light over strong fingers, touching a large ring. She felt the shape of the stone, the design, the seal of Lordaeron.
Arthas! She exclaimed, surprise and delight warming her voice as she turned to face him.
He uncovered her eyes at once and grinned down at her. He was less physically perfect than Kaelfas. His hair, like the elven prince's, was blonde, but simply yellow rather than looking like spun gold. He was tall and well-built, seeming solid rather than fluidly graceful to her. And despite the fact that he was of a rank equal to Kaelfas,
although she wondered if, privately, Kale doubted that. The elves seemed to think themselves superior to all humans, regardless of rank. There was an ease about him that Jaina responded to immediately. Decorum returned to her, and she dropped a curtsy.
Your Highness, this is an unlooked-for surprise. What are you doing here, if I may ask?
A sudden thought sobered her.
All is well in Capital City, is it not?
Arthas, please. In Dalaran, the Magi rule, and mere men must give deference.
His sea-green eyes twinkled with good humor.
And we are comrades in mischief, after sneaking off to see the internment camps, aren't we?
She relaxed and smiled.
I suppose we are. In answer to your question, everything is just fine. In fact, so little of real import is going on that my father agreed to my request to come here for a few months to study.
Study? But you are a member of the Order of the Silver Hand.
You're not going to become a mage, are you?
He laughed and drew her arm through his as they walked back toward the students' quarters. She easily fell in step with him.
Heartily. Such intellectual dedication is beyond me, I fear. But it did occur to me that one of the best places in Azeroth to learn about history, the nature of magic, and other things a king needs to know about is right here in Dalaran. Fortunately, Father and your archmage agreed.
As he spoke, he covered Jaina's hand, resting on his arm, with his own. It was a friendly and courteous gesture, but Jaina felt a little spark go through her. She glanced up at him.
I'm impressed. The boy who sneaked me out in the middle of the night to go spying on orcs was not quite so interested in history and knowledge.
Arthas chuckled and bent his head conspiratorially down to hers.
Honestly, I'm still not. I mean, I am, but that's not the real reason I came here.
All right, now I'm confused.
Why did you come to Dalaran then? They had reached her quarters, and she stopped, turning to face him and releasing his arm. He didn't answer at first, merely held her gaze with his and smiled knowingly. Then he took her hand and kissed it, a courtly gesture, one she had experienced many times from many noble gentlemen. His lips lingered just an instant longer than was strictly proper, and he didn't release her hand at once. Her eyes widened. Was he implying? Had he really contrived to come to Dalaran for a few months? No mean feat, Antonidas was notoriously leery of outsiders. Simply to see her? Before she could recover sufficiently to ask the question, he winked at her and bowed.
I will see you tonight at dinner, my lady.
The dinner was a formal one. The return of Prince Kaelfas and the arrival of Prince Arthas on the same day had sent those who served the Kirin Tor into a flurry of activity. There was a large dining room that was reserved for special occasions, and it was here that the dinner was hosted. A table large enough to seat over 24 stretched from one end of the room to the other. Overhead, 3 chandeliers twinkled with brightly burning candles, echoed by the candles burning on the table. Sconces along the walls held torches, and, to keep the ambience gentle while still providing sufficient illumination, several globes hovered around the sides of the room, ready to be summoned where a little extra light might be needed. Servants rarely intruded, save to bring out and clear the courses. Bottles of wine poured themselves with the flick of a finger. Flute, harp, and lute provided soothing background music, their graceful notes created by magic rather than human hands or breaths of air. Archmage Antonidas presided in one of his rare appearances. He was a tall man, seeming all the taller because of his extremely thin build. His long beard now had much more gray than brown in it, and his head was completely bald, but his eyes were alert and piercing. Present also was Archmage Crassus, upright and alert, his hair catching the candle and torchlight to gleam mostly silver, with red and black streaks. Many others were in attendance, all of high rank. Jaina
in fact, was far and away the lowest-ranking person present, and she was the Archmage's apprentice. Jaina came from a military background, and one of the things her father had instilled in her was a solid understanding of her strengths and weaknesses.
"It is as much of a mistake to underestimate yourself as to overestimate yourself," Daylan had once told her. "False modesty is as bad as false pride. Know exactly what you are capable of at any moment, and act accordingly. Any other path is folly, and could be deadly in battle."
She knew she was deft in the magical arts. She was intelligent and focused, and had learned much in the short time she had already been here. Surely Antonidas would not take on an apprentice as a charity case. With no sense of the false pride her father had warned her so judiciously about, she understood she had the potential to become a powerful mage. She wanted to succeed on her own merit, not be advanced because an elven prince enjoyed her company. She fought to keep her face from betraying her irritation as she spooned up another mouthful of turtle bisque. The conversation, not surprisingly, as the internment camps were located fairly close to Dalaran, focused on the orcs, although the mage city liked to think itself above such things. Kale reached a long, elegant hand for another slice of bread and began buttering it.
"Lethargic or no," he said, "they are dangerous."
"My father, King Tyrannus, agrees with your assessment, Prince Kael'thas," Arthas said, smiling charmingly at the elf. "That's why the camps exist. It is unfortunate that they cost so much to maintain, but surely a little gold is a small price for the safety of the people of Azeroth."
"They are beasts, brutes," said Kael'thas, his normally tenor voice dropping in his disgust. "They and their dragons damaged Quel'Thalas badly. Only the Sunwell's energies prevented them from wreaking even more havoc than they did. You humans could solve the problem of protecting your people without taxing them so severely by simply executing the creatures."
Jaina recalled the one glimpse she had seen of the orcs. They had looked weary to her, broken and dejected. They'd had children with them.
"Have you been to the camps, Prince Kael'thas?" she said tartly, speaking before she could stop herself. "Have you actually seen what they have become?"
Color rose in Kael'thas's cheeks for a moment, but he kept his expression pleasant.
"No, Lady Jaina, I have not. Nor do I see any need to. I see what they have done whenever I behold the burned trunks of the glorious trees of my homeland, and pay my respects to those slain in that attack. And surely you have not seen them either. I cannot imagine that so refined a lady would wish to be given a tour of the camps."
Jaina very carefully did not look at Arthas as she replied,
"While His Highness gives me a lovely compliment, I do not think that refinement has any bearing on one's desire to see justice. Indeed, I think it rather more likely that a refined individual would not wish to see sentient beings slaughtered like animals."
She gave him a pleasant smile and continued eating her soup. Kael'thas gave her a searching look, confused by her reaction.
"The law is Lordaeron's, and King Tyrannus may do as he sees fit in his own realm," Antonidas broke in. "Dalaran and every other Alliance kingdom also must pay for their upkeep," said a mage Jaina did not know. "Surely we have a voice in this, since we are paying for it."
Antonidas waved a thin hand. "It is not the issue of who pays for the camps, or indeed whether the camps are even necessary. It is this strange lethargy of the orcs that intrigues me. I have researched what little we have on orcish history, and I do not believe it is confinement that renders them so listless. Nor do I believe it is an illness, at least not one that we need worry about contracting."
Because Antonidas never indulged in idle chatter, everyone stopped their bickering and turned to listen to him.
Jaina was surprised. This was the first she had heard from any of the Magi regarding the Orcish situation at all. She had no doubt that this was a deliberate decision on Antonidas's part to reveal this information at this time. With both Arthas and Kael'thas present, word would travel swiftly throughout Lordaeron and Quel'Thalas. Antonidas did a little by accident.
If it is not an illness nor a direct result of their internment, Arthas said pleasantly, then what do you think it is, Archmage?
Antonidas turned toward the young prince. It is my understanding that the orcs were not always so bloodthirsty. Khadgar told me what he had learned from Garona, who... Garona was the half-breed who murdered King Lane, Arthas said, all trace of good humor gone. With all due respect, I do not think we can trust anything such a creature says. Antonidas lifted up a calming hand as some of the others began to murmur agreement.
This information came before she turned traitor, he said, and it has been verified through other sources.
He smiled a little, deliberately refusing to identify what other sources he had consulted.
They committed themselves to demonic influence. Their skin turned green, their eyes red. I believe they were saturated with this external darkness by the time of the first invasion. Now they have been cut off from that source of sustenance. I think we are seeing not an illness, but withdrawal. Demonic energy is a potent thing. To be denied it would have dire consequences.
Kael'thas waved a hand dismissively.
Even if such a theory is correct, why should we care about them? They were foolish enough to trust demons. They were thoughtless enough to permit themselves to become addicted to these corruptive energies. I, for one, do not think it is wise to help them find a cure for this addiction, even if it could return them to a peaceful state. Right now, they are powerless and crushed. It is how I, and anyone in his right mind, prefer to see them after what they have done to us.
Ah, but if they can be returned to a peaceful state, then we will not have to keep them locked up in the camps, and the money can be distributed elsewhere, Antonidas said mildly, before the entire table could erupt in argument.
I'm sure King Terranus does not levy these fees simply to line his own pockets.
How does your father fare, Prince Arthas? And your family?
I regret that I was unable to attend your initiation ceremony, but I hear it was quite the event.
Stormwind was most gracious to me, Arthas said, smiling warmly and digging into the second course of delicately broiled trout served with sautéed greens. It was good to see King Varian again.
His lovely queen has recently provided him with an heir, I understand.
Indeed. And if the way little Anduin grips my finger is any indication of how he'll grip a sword one day, he'll make a fine warrior. While we all pray your coronation day is many years distant, I dare say that a royal wedding would be welcomed, Antonidas continued. Have any young ladies caught your eye? Or are you still Lordaeron's most eligible bachelor?
Kael'thas turned his attention to his plate, but Jaina knew he was following the conversation keenly. She kept her own face carefully composed.
Arthas did not look in her direction as he laughed and reached for the wine.
Ah, that would be telling, would it not? And where's the fun in that?
There's plenty of time left for such things. Mixed feelings washed over Jaina. She was a little disappointed, but also somewhat relieved. Perhaps it was best if she and Arthas remained only friends. After all, she had come here to learn how to be the most accomplished mage she could become, not flirt. A student of magic needed to be disciplined, to be logical, not emotional. She had duties and needed to perform them with her full attention. She needed to study.
I need to study,
Jaina protested a few days after the dinner, when Arthas approached her leading two horses.
Come on, Jaina, Arthas grinned. Even the most diligent student needs to take a break now and then. It's a beautiful day, and you should be out enjoying it.
I am, she said. It was true. She was in the gardens with her books, rather than cloistered in one of the reading rooms.
A bit of exercise will help you think better.
He extended a hand to her as she sat underneath the tree. She smiled, despite herself.
Arthas, you will be a magnificent king one day, she said teasingly, grasping his hand and allowing herself to be pulled to her feet. No one can seem to deny you anything.
He laughed at that and held her horse while she mounted. She was wearing trousers today, light linen breeches, and was able to sit astride rather than side-saddle with long robes. He swung up easily on his own horse a moment later. Jaina glanced at the horse he was riding, a bay mare rather than the white stallion fate had snatched from him.
I don't think I ever said how sorry I was about Invincible, she said quietly.
The mirth left his face, and it was like a shadow passing over the sun. Then the smile returned, slightly sobered.
It's all right, but thanks. Now, I have picnic supplies, and the day awaits. Let's go.
It was a day Jaina would remember for the rest of her life, one of those perfect, late summer days where the sunlight seemed thick and golden as honey. Arthas set a hard pace, but Jaina was an experienced rider and kept up easily. He took her far away from the city, and along stretches of green, expansive meadows. The horses seemed to be enjoying themselves as much as their riders, their ears pricked forward and their nostrils flaring as they inhaled the rich scents. The picnic was simple but delicious fare. Bread, cheese, fruit, some light white wine. Arthas lay back, folding his arms behind his head, and dozed for a bit while Jaina kicked off her boots, digging her feet into the thick, soft grass as she sat with her back to a tree and read for a while. The book was interesting, a treatise on the nature of teleportation, but the languid heat of the day, the vigorous exercise, and the soft hum of cicadas served to lull her to sleep as well. Jaina awoke sometime later, slightly chilled. The sun was starting to go down. She sat up, knuckling the sleep out of her eyes, to realize that Arthas was nowhere to be seen. Nor was his horse. Her own gelding, reins draped about a tree branch, grazed contentedly. Frowning, she got to her feet. Arthas? There was no answer. Likely he had just decided to go for a quick exploration and would be back any moment. She strained to listen for the sound of hoofbeats, but there were none. There were still orcs loose, wandering around, or so the rumors went, and mountain cats and bears, less alien, but no less dangerous. Mentally, Jaina went over her spells in her mind. She was sure she'd be able to defend herself if she was attacked. Well, fairly sure. The attack was sudden and silent. A thump against the back of her neck and cold wetness was the first and only clue she had. She gasped and whirled. Her attacker was a blur of motion, leaping to another hiding space with the speed of a stag, pausing only long enough to fire another missile at her. This one caught her in the mouth, and she started to choke with laughter. She pawed at the snow, gasping a little as some of it slid down her shirt.
Arthas, you don't fight fair!
Her answer was four snowballs rolled in her direction, and she scrambled to pick them up. He'd obviously climbed high enough to find the places in the mountains where winter had come early, and returned with snowballs as trophies. Where was he? There, a flash of his red tunic. The fight continued for a while until both had run out of ammunition.
Truce!
Arthas called, and when Jaina agreed, laughing so hard she could barely get the word out, he leaped from his place of concealment among the rocks and ran to her. He hugged her, laughing as well, and she was pleased to see that he, too, had traces of snow in his hair.
"I knew it all those years ago," he said.
"Knew what?"
Jaina had been pelted with so many snowballs that, despite the fact that it was late summer, she was chilled. Arthas felt her shivering and tightened his arms around her. Jaina knew she should pull back. A friendly and spontaneous hug was one thing, but to linger in his embrace was something else. But she stayed where she was, letting her head rest against his chest, her ear pressed against his heart, hearing it thump rhythmically and rapidly. She closed her eyes as one hand came up to stroke her hair, removing bits of snow as he spoke.
"The day I first saw you, I thought that this would be a girl I could have fun with. Someone who wouldn't mind going for a swim on a hot summer day, or..."
He stepped back a little, brushing a few bits of melting pieces of winter off her face and smiling.
"Or getting a snowball in the face.
I didn't hurt you, did I?" She smiled in return, suddenly warmed.
"No. No, you didn't."
Their eyes met, and Jaina felt heat coming to her cheeks. She moved to step back, but his arm encircled her as firmly as an iron band. He continued to touch her face, trailing strong, calloused fingers down the curve of her cheek.
"Jaina,"
he said quietly, and she shivered. But not from cold. Not this time. It was not proper. She should move back. Instead, she lifted her face and closed her eyes. The kiss was gentle at first, soft and sweet, the first Jaina had ever known. As if of their own will, her arms crept up to drape around his neck, and she pressed against him as the kiss deepened. She felt as though she was drowning, and he was the only solid thing in the world. This was what, who, she wanted. This youth, who was her friend despite his title, who saw and understood her scholarly character, but also knew how to coax forth the playful and adventurous girl who didn't often have a chance to come out, who wasn't often glimpsed. But he had seen all of who she was, not just the face she presented to the world.
"Arthas," she whispered as she clung to him. "Arthas."
Chapter 7. It was a good few months, Sindalaran. Arthas found, somewhat to his surprise, that he actually was learning things that would be useful for a king to know. There were also plenty of opportunities to enjoy the lingering summer and first cool hints of autumn, and he loved riding, even if he felt a pang in his chest every time he mounted a horse that was not invincible. And there was Jaina. He'd not planned on kissing her initially, but when he found himself with her in his arms, her eyes bright with laughter and good humor, he'd done so. And she'd responded. Her schedule was more demanding and rigorous than his, and they had not seen each other nearly as much as they had wanted to. When they had, it was usually at public functions. And both had agreed, without discussing it at all, that it would not do to give the rumor mill any grist. It lent an extra spice to the relationship. They stole moments when they could, a kiss in an alcove, a fleeting look at a formal dinner. Their first outing had been completely innocent at the outset, but now they avoided such things assiduously. He memorized her schedule so as to bump into her. She found excuses to wander into the stables or in the courtyard that Arthas and his men used as practice areas to keep their battle skills sharp. Arthas loved every risky, daring minute of it. Now, he waited in a little used hallway, standing in front of a bookshelf, pretending to peruse the titles. Jaina would be coming in from her fire spell practice. Out of habit, she told him with a slightly embarrassed grin, she's still trained near the jail area and the many pools of water. She'd have to cross through this area to get to her room. His ears strained for the sound. There it was, the soft, swift pad of her slippered feet moving across the floor. He turned, taking a book down and pretending to look at it,
watching for her out of the corner of his eye. Jaina was clad, as usual, in traditional apprentice robes. Her hair looked like sunshine, and her face was set in her typical expression of a concentrated